Today I want to talk about the crucifixion of Jesus the Christ. There are about 2.1 billion people on planet Earth who claim or identify themselves as Christian. That's about one-third of all the people on the planet. And I think that without the crucifixion of Christ, that number would probably be much closer to zero than to 2.1 billion. In this context, the crucifixion was a gift to us. It was sufficiently powerful as an experience that it impressed the human consciousness and the minds and the hearts of some of those people back in the day and in the following generations, so that they remembered the event, they wrote accounts about the events, and they maintained the memory of the man named Jesus for years and years, and then centuries, and now over 2,000 years. And they've maintained that memory alive. Now, human opinions about time vary tremendously, and, you know, the average opinion would say that 2,000 years is a long time. Well, that may be true. But when we compare 2,000 years to the number of years that the planet has existed, the life of the planet, or we compare 2,000 years to the number of years that human beings have been on the planet, 2,000 years is a very short period of time, like a drop in a bucket. Like an instant, and not a long time at all. Since how we think about things determines our future experiences, that is, we reap what we sow, and we sow with our thoughts and feelings, and we reap experiences. Because of that, it serves us to see the value of the crucifixion in the highest possible terms, because we're going to reap according to whatever terms we do see it in. We could say that in the 2,000 years, mankind has advanced tremendously in the areas of technology. And you look at farm equipment and weaponry and computer technology and communications devices and all kinds of different things of that sort. You could say, wow, we really have advanced technologically speaking. But we could also say that we haven't advanced very much at all spiritually. We don't recognize the oneness of all of us on the planet. We don't see each human being as part of the whole. We see ourselves as separate and distinct from one another, and in fact, oftentimes as threats to one another. We don't recognize the Earth as a living organism, so we have tremendous disregard for the Earth, its needs, and the fact that we're living on it. And so we're literally soiling the place where we live. We don't recognize God as the source and active provider for all that we need. Growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, rhythm, all within a framework of a predictable spiritual law and order. We don't know where stuff comes from spiritually. We don't have a grasp of that. We're not aware. A woman recently told me a story of her 3-year-old son. One day she saw him pick up her iPhone off of a table and put it to his mouth and say, "Pizza, pizza." He thought, based upon his experience, that pizzas come from the iPhone if you said a magic word, pizza. Now, that's a cute story. It shows us that children are incredible when it comes to learning. They adopt behaviors. They are going to learn what we do. And so it pays for us to be aware of what we're doing, what we're expressing in their area. Now, it's a cute story, and this is a story that it's about a 3-year-old boy. But you know what? The trouble is, we're just like that 3-year-old. Now, there are differences in the devices that we use. We've got other devices. We've got other activities besides calling out for pizza, trying to get our needs met. And we've got other magic words that we practice and say. Haven't we been taught as children to learn and use magic words? Alibaba and the 40 Thieves, you know that 1001 Nights story? That Open Sesame are not the first magic words that we learned as children. Didn't we learn to say please and thank you? Those magic words that were going to get us what we wanted? Isn't that? What's the magic word? What's the magic word? Please. Okay, here it is. That's how you get what you want. Isn't the phrase, "I'm sorry," magic words that eliminate or mitigate the threat of punishment. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Don't we do that? Don't we say, trust me, to get another person to let down their guard, their defensive, their skepticism, their judgment about what is about to follow? Sure we do. Now, there are a lot of ways that we use the magic words, I love you, some higher vibration and some lower. Don't we say this, I love you, to make ourselves and another person feel good? Don't we sometimes say, I love you, because it just bubbles out, these good feelings bubble out and seek expression? And you know for a fact that you've heard these, or perhaps even expressed them, when we use these magic words of I love you for the purposes of getting what we want. According to the Bible, Jesus said magic words near the end of his physical life. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they are doing. Even during the experience of torture, crucifixion, and what was going to be as a very quickly approaching physical death, Jesus was able to offer love to his murderers. He knew that they, just like all of us, even today, even as we're standing here or sitting there listening, that we're all operating out of our level of awareness. And if we're operating out of a lower level of awareness, what the behaviors, what thoughts and feelings and behaviors are going to come forward are pretty predictable. And as we're a higher vibration, higher level of awareness, and recognize we have other choices, then that's what we're going to express. Our lower level of awareness, in which we kill what we don't like or we don't understand, or what we want to keep separate from us, or we steal or take or earn what we do want. Jesus gave us the gift during crucifixion of showing us that we have a choice of what energies, what vibrations to offer, what seeds to sow, even under the worst possible physical conditions. Dramatic deaths are memorable. They impress human consciousness. I just went to the movies the other day and saw the movie called Conspirator. It's a movie about the assassination of the United States President Abraham Lincoln and the trial of the conspirators involved, or alleged conspirators. President Lincoln, President John F. Kennedy, to a lesser extent his brother Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King have had their images burned into mass consciousness, certainly in America, if not the world, because of the way they died, because of the way they were killed. We remember a lot about Julius Caesar, in large part because of his death. He was also assassinated, and that stuck, that image has stuck in human consciousness. In political conflicts, one of the concerns of rulers is they want to avoid killing the opposition figurehead for fear of making that person a martyr, because they recognize over time that a martyr, fallen heroes, they can inspire even greater devotion and greater loyalty and greater zeal in their followers than those people did when they were alive. And if people create martyrs by assassinating, murdering the leaders, now all of a sudden those people that are seeking more and more control and power and influence have created a real problem for themselves. If Jesus could recognize that his future included a death by crucifixion, he may have also understood that this type of death, so dramatic, was going to leave a permanent impression on human consciousness. He was a teacher, right? He was a teacher. That's one of the, I guess, couldn't we say that the purposes of his life was to awaken people? Didn't he try to impress human beings with the possibilities that come with an awareness of their relationship with their Creator? Wasn't he a teacher above all else? Despite the miracles, despite the teaching, despite the admonitions to love and to care for one another, during his lifetime, despite the miracles and the healing, Christians are primarily fixated on his death. I'm thinking that human consciousness has got to have a lot of stress over the ideas that a completely good person, as that's the way we're taught, Jesus was completely good, and despite you know, the only Son of God and all kinds of other labels attached to him, despite amazing individual power of miracles and to be able to create situations, he had access to God the Father, and he still could be tortured and killed by people with evil intentions. That's got to be a little scary, because if that can happen to Jesus, what hope do we mere mortals have that we can protect ourselves and our families from this type of person? And this type of person, they're plentiful today, just like they were 2,000 years ago. On a lot of levels, it looked like the bad guys won the battle between good and evil when the bad guys lived and the good guy died on the cross during crucifixion. On the other hand, if we consider this being a war is a long-term activity instead of a battle. A battle is a short-term event. The war between good and evil, that's one way to view it, but it's really a war on the field of consciousness between a higher level of consciousness and a lower level of consciousness. We could define it that battle being, or that war being, between two other opposing energy patterns. That war is between bonding and rejecting, between unity and separation, between creating and destroying, between loving and hating, between trust and fear, between abundance and scarcity, between health and illness, between peace and war. And that list could go on and on, where we could see these oppositional ideas. And you can see evidence of all of these wars today, depending on how you want to view them, simply by turning on the TV and watching the 6 o'clock news or reading the newspapers. More importantly, we could each find evidence of these wars by examining our own hearts and our own minds, our own thoughts, and our own actions to see which side of this process we have aligned ourselves with. There are many viewpoints on Jesus' crucifixion. I'm going to go through 6 or 7 or so, and this list probably could go on indefinitely. The first thing I could say is that Jesus was a political threat, and he had to be disgraced to disempower his image. Wasn't going to be good enough to have a noble martyr. Got to disgrace him so everybody would move away from that, and so he would lose power after his death. In his day, crucifixion was a disgraceful way to be put to death. It was apparently used for the lowest of the low. And so that was one of the things that happened. Certainly, he caused upheaval and discord in the average Jew, and maybe even the average Gentile back in the day. And this was going to be a problem to the Jews and the Romans that were in power. All of a sudden, the guy comes along, literally rocking the boat, telling them what they've been taught for some thousands of years was inaccurate, and in fact, there was a different way to look at things. There were different possibilities. There was a different ruler that they could align their energy with, that is, the divine. And, you know, now all of a sudden, it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. He disrupted a lot of what was working very well for a small group of people, and not working very well, of course, for the great majority. But it was that small group of people had the power, and they were the ones that needed to silence him. The third viewpoint on crucifixion is Jesus was the perfect Son of God who was being sacrificed for our sins. That is a common opinion. That teaching has been taught for easily 2,000 years, even more intense in the last, I don't know how many hundred years. But in Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth, Jesus refutes that idea. He said, that's not true. That is not accurate. That is not accurate. You can't die for somebody else's sins, because that violates the law of cause and effect. And the law of cause and effect can't be violated. So now that second part of that point of view would be really very offensive to people who have invested tremendous energy into this idea that because he died, good things can accrue to us. The fourth point is that Jesus was demonstrating the power to rise above physical death. Now, in the day, this concept of life after physical death was basically not known. The average person wasn't thinking like that, didn't recognize that there was life after death, nor did they consider the idea that there was life before birth. So it's like, you know, you were born, then later on you died, end of story. That was it, just that segment of experience with nothing before and nothing after it. He was demonstrating as a gift that there was more after the physical body died. The fifth point is that the crucifixion was proof that the law of cause and effect was always at work. In letter 3 of Christ's Returns, Jesus acknowledged that he violated the law of love twice, and it came back to him. He knew right after he did it that he set things in motion. It was coming anyway. He knew that. But first of all, the experience that he had is when he dropped from Christ consciousness, this higher level of perception, down into human consciousness, and he got angry at the figure and cursed it, which was the first time that he ever harmed any living thing by speaking at it. And now all of a sudden he recognized, he already knew about the law of cause and effect, that we reap what we sow. And after he did that, it was like, whoops. But his anger and his fear and his anxiety about what was coming down the road dropped him into human consciousness. And the second experience that he had with this idea of law of cause and effect was shortly thereafter, when he was preaching near in the temple, and the crowds were starting to form, and they were starting to push the money changers out of the way, and then started to get turned into a ruckus because the money changers were getting annoyed that these people listening to Jesus were trying to understand what he was saying, but in fact they were interfering with their ability to make money by selling objects, living things, innocent animals for sacrifice. And he knew full well that these sacrifices did these people absolutely no good. It would just cause them to spend their money on something worthless, put them into debt and fear as a way to try to placate an angry God, which was foolish in the start. That Jewish belief in a punitive angry God that you had to appease all the time, he knew, and all of his teachings indicated that that was inaccurate, and he got angry at the money changers and drove him out of the temple. And then his anger caused that backlash. He sowed anger, and he knew what was coming after that. The sixth point is the dramatic death by crucifixion was, I'll say, necessary to create a small crack in the shell of human consciousness. Now, you've heard this expression, he's hard-headed, she's hard-headed. Wow. You know, hard to get anything into that head. Human consciousness is, in fact, a hard shell. It is designed, according to Christ in the book, Christ Returns, as a means to help us individuate, so we can separate and be individuals and have our experiences. And so this human consciousness puts space between us and other things. We see ourselves as separate from other things, but when the ego drive takes over, then all kinds of negative things start to flow. And so you can look at this crucifixion as necessary to crack that shell of possibilities that over time, how about centuries, some sort of growing need, this awareness of a growing need of a connection to divine is what we really need in order to achieve happiness and love and health and prosperity and growth on a lot of different levels. That crack in the shell may have occurred a little over 2,000 years ago for the great majority of us. The seventh point is that the crucifixion was another gift, but in multiple ways. I think it validates the concepts of bonding and rejecting. The first time I ever came across these was October 14, 2010, when I was gifted the PDFs of the Christ Letters, which is the same content as Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth, where Jesus says, these two concepts, responding and rejecting are absolutely essential for individual existence. For us to be individuals, for all the things we see in our environment and in the universe, bonding and rejecting have got to be there. However, when those are driven by ego, bonding and rejecting are responsible for all human suffering. Just that awareness of how these forces, these impulses, these energy patterns play out in our lives is fantastic for us in increasing our awareness. They play out in our behaviors. We see it in love. We see it in healing activities. We see it in nurturing and teaching and support. We see it in the miracles. We also see it in the hate and greed and murder that was prevalent back then, and perhaps even more so in our greater scale today. Validation of bonding, rejecting as concepts makes us think that we're starting to understand some of the stuff that drives life as we know it. And as we become aware, we've been gifted. The crucifixion was a gift in that it's prepared the ground for human awareness, for new knowledge about the life and teachings of Christ. It's got to be pretty obvious to us that the state of the world, the people, all the religious institutions, the suffering and deprivation that's going on in various cities and countries and states and continents is evidence. It's got to be evidence that we certainly must have missed something out of what Jesus was teaching 2,000 years ago. Very little of what he was teaching 2,000 years ago explains why we would savage the people in the New World, why we would colonize Africa the way we did out of greed and so on, just like we did with New World, and what we've done in wars and even up to this day, wars for materials and supplies and oil and other resources. We must have missed something vitally important from his original teachings 2,000 years ago. That's the only explanation for the condition of the world, particularly when a third of us identify ourselves as Christians. You look at the United States and you see what's going on in various areas over various political or economic or health issues, and you can see that there's very little love is shown as brotherly love in this very Christian country of America. Frankly, it's unbelievably shocking to see mobs spewing hatred at city hall meetings or rallies against or for, mostly against, other people, other religions, other ethnic groups, other ways of thinking, other ideas. That level of rejection is scary. Another gift of the crucifixion is that it has made sincere seekers able to attract new knowledge into their lives. Because the crucifixion made Jesus such a hot topic for 2,000 some years, other aspects of his life were also included in the story. So we've got stories of healings, we've got stories of miracles, we've got stories of him walking on water and doing other things. Those stories appealed to those of us who are trying to increase our understanding of how these acts were actually possible. How is it that a person could do that? It was great that in the Bible, there were even quotes that says, you know, number one, that God the Father working through me is doing this, and you can do these things and even greater. It's like, wow, if that doesn't open the door to possibilities for those of us interested in this, we're missing the gift. We would have never heard of these ideas if we hadn't heard of Jesus in the first place. And I'm thinking if Jesus died of old age, we might have never heard of him. He would have just been, you know, just another person with miraculous individual capabilities. But he wouldn't have been impressed upon human consciousness for over 2,000 years. So some of us can try to understand what he was really teaching in the first place. The eighth point is, and I would like to go back to the law of cause and effect, or as some of us know it, the law of cause of law of attraction, or even before that it was called we reap what we sow. If we can get the gift of awareness that no one, not even Jesus, is outside this law, we can let go of the need to judge so many other things. Must be a reason where it says, judge not, or you shall be judged. Not by God up there sitting with a gavel in his hand like a judge at a court hearing, but we bring it right back to ourselves. We bring it right back to ourselves by what we sow, we reap. When we recognize that our cursing what is, the conditions that we're experiencing, or what was, the conditions that existed over the last 2,000 years, or when we curse the behaviors of other people, or even when we curse the behaviors of ourselves and find it necessary to beat ourselves up, we're going to bring more suffering, more pain, more unhappiness to ourselves, unless we recognize that that's what happens. We don't need to do that. We can understand that we were given this gift to choose different thoughts. And this was, to me, one of the many gifts, one of the many ideals, one of the many images given to us by Jesus through the act of crucifixion. To me, the crucifixion is not a sacrifice, but rather a dramatic, permanently impressive gift and teaching, showing us the clear distinctions between expressing lower forms of human consciousness, which is clearly what he did before that, and also what the murders were doing at that point, based upon their fear and greed and mob-like mentality and lust for power and control and influence, and the higher forms of consciousness that he displayed for most of his enlightened life, and at the moment that he was dying, when he asked for forgiveness for the perpetrators. If he could have a choice, and he could make that choice of choosing the highest vibration offering, knowing that that's possible even under those terrible circumstances, we have an opportunity to do the same. We have a choice of which vibration to offer. That's the gift of the crucifixion of Jesus the Christ. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is from Letter 8 of Christ Returns. Father, Mother Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know that it is your will that we should be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. And I would say that includes within everything else, within every person, within every living thing, within every inanimate object. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us with imperfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives, our loved ones, our actions, our thoughts, our feelings, our work into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.